afternoon, everybody. A very warm welcome to LSE, to the Thai Theatre, and to this event called Pathways to Peace, which is co-hosted by LSE Ideas, the Latin American and Caribbean Centre at LSE, and International Alert. And we're grateful to all of those for helping us to organise today. My name is Mary Martin. I'm a Senior Research Fellow in LSE Ideas, where I run the UN Business and Human Security Initiative. I'm delighted to welcome Joshua Mitrotti, who is General Director of the Colombian Agency for Reintegration, who's going to talk to us about the challenges of implementing the peace agreement, which was signed last year between the government and FARC, where a central component is the reintegration of illegal armed groups, and also about the history of ACR before that. I think Colombia's approach to reintegration is possibly unique in the world. Disarmament, demobilization, reintegration programs have become something of a growth industry since the 1990s because they're seen as essential to ensuring a durable, sustainable peace. But I think, unlike Colombia, most EDR programs possibly are externally led by outside donors, such as the World Bank, whereas Colombia has pioneered its own bottom-up process. And we know that the R in DDR is perhaps the hardest part to pull off successfully. I think the World Bank's own estimates at one stage were that 5 years after the end of DDR programs, almost 40% of participants drop out. Only around one quarter find jobs outside the military and the public sectors, and 17% remain unemployed. So perhaps one of the questions today is, how effective can reintegration policies be in preventing a return to conflict and ensuring lasting peace in Colombia? Mr. Mitrotti is very well placed to deal with this challenge. He's been general director of the agency since 2014. Before that, he worked in the former presidential counselor's office for reintegration, where he designed the policy for reintegration based on international standards of DDR, and where he was instrumental in developing the structure of the reintegration agency. He's led the design and implementation of reintegration in more than 90 municipalities in Colombia. He worked in the Office of the People's Advocate, the Bogota Mayor's Office, the Ministry of Interior and Justice, and the Presidency of the Republic, specializing in citizen and community participation, participatory budgeting, and human rights, among others. So I think you get a sense of where he's approaching this particular challenge from. Just a brief word about today's discussion. Mr. Mitrotti will speak for about 15, 20 minutes. Then there will be a lot of time for us to have a debate, put your questions and comments, and for that part, we will have translation into Spanish. Mr. Mitrotti, we look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Thank you very much to LSE to allowing us to present the institutionality that Colombia has developed in the past 14 years. I would like to thank also the ambassador of Colombia here in the UK, and International Alert was support this trip to Europe and to find new partners to what Colombia is doing right now in the peace process. First of all, I have to say that I'm here as a representative of the Agency of Reintegration of Colombia, but I'm also a member of the Commission for the National Commission for Reincorporation. I will talk a lot about the experience and the capacity, and I will give the opportunity to talk very sincerely with you what are the key aspects of what we have done and what we have to do in the future. First of all, Colombia is a country who has a long experience in reinsertion process, reincorporation process, reintegration process. Since the 90s, we had like 65,000 ex-combatants in process. In the 90s, at least 9,000 of them left M19 EPL Quintín Lame. Unfortunately, we lost the capacity that we built on this program in the 90s. And in the 2003, in the first administration of President Uribe, we started talks with the paramilitaries. And for that time, we had the same discussion that we were very lucky we didn't have, to ask if the institutionality that we built in the 90s was useful for the paramilitaries' talks. So they built a new institutionality in Colombia. When you try to build new institutionality, it takes time. And most of the knowledge was lost. And that's why we made a process short term in 2003, only thinking about giving money to the ex-combatants. That was a 24-month approach, only with money, without intervention. In 2006, the president was aware that that program wasn't sufficient to adapt and to accompany the ex-combatants of being citizens. So that's why he asked Frank Pearl, a former High Commissioner for Reintegration, High Commissioner for Peace, and he was a member of the peace talk with FARC, and he was a leader of the talks with ELN, to come from the private sector to help us to design a new model. And I believe that he took a great decision. He asked himself, well, who else in the world has done DDR processes? And he found that 30 countries, at least in the last 30 years, had the experience, has the capacity. So he asked the World Bank, the UN, and the European Commission to help him to see what were the lessons learned, the capacities, the mistakes that those programs has to give to the Colombian example. But also, he reviewed the Colombian experience. So we built in 2006 a new office, very similar to the one that we had in the 90s in the presidency of Colombia. And we have transformed that institutionality in the last 14 years, but we have preserved the knowledge, the capacity. In Colombia, we have two ways to demobilize and the process for disarmament. The first one is the individual, or the capacity of the government, and particularly the armed force, has strengthened for the past 20 years. And with the pressure they made to the groups, they facilitate the individual disarmament of 26,000 ex-combatants. And we have another way, is the collective, where the Office of the High Commissioner for Peace is the one in a peace talk who agree with the groups. That happened with FARC, that happened with paramilitaries in the past. The demobilize, the disarmament process and the demobilization process. The reintegration process come after the disarmament and the demobilization. We don't take part of that aspect, either in the individual or the collective. The reintegration is a process of a human approach, dignifying those ones who went to the war, being conscious that Colombia is an unequal country with a lot of difficulties in some regions, and we have to give opportunities. This is a model to give opportunities for those who went to the war and want to get out of the war and be citizens. In Colombia, in the past 14 years, we had the chance to demobilize as state 60,000 ex-combatants. 50,000 of them want to have the services given by the agency. That's a voluntary program. It's not obligatory. Compulsory program. And nowadays we have 16,000 ex-combatants who are citizens, who have fulfilled all the program, and now they're citizens with all the rights and all the possibilities. We are nowadays attending or giving services to 18,000 ex-combatants, 5,000 from the ex-paramilitaries, and at least 13,000 from FARC and ELN ex-combatants. We work in four principles. First of all, we think that vulnerability in Colombia is one way to be very close to illegality and violence. We're not suggesting that poverty equals violence. But when the state is not present, when we don't have health programs, educational programs, the role model may be in violence for those populations. So we want to make a great job for overcoming the conditions that causes vulnerability, to try to make citizens responsible and with rights and duty with the democracy. 94% of the budget that we have spent in the past 14 years is Colombian budget. It's paid by all the Colombian citizens. That's a big ownership of the program. We have also the opportunity that the war in Colombia didn't make a failure in the state, in the private sector. In the past 20 years, Colombia is growing constantly and in a conflict situation. We also think that we have to give the same opportunities to the ex-combatant that the Colombians. We don't have to make bad incentives to make poor Colombians to go to war to receive the best program and the best attention. And last, we work for the Colombian territories, not for Bogota or the cities. We work for all the country. That's how we work. We have a big ecosystem who is working with us, private sector, public sector, national state, department state, and the regional state, and the municipalities. And we work, those red points are where we have offices in Colombia. Wherever our ex-combatant wants to be, we have to assure the services of the agency and the state. That's the way we treat our ex-combatants. We work with a multidimensional methodology, and we want to make change in the context, in the communities. We want to make change on the individual, on the families. So it's a multidimensional methodology that we have been developing for the past 14 years. Very briefly, results. 90% of the people who came to the process was affected, psychologically affected by the war. 15 years average the time they spent on the war. 46% they were recruited as minors. And we had developed a methodology that was implemented in Central America, in Guatemala and Salvador, by the Dutch government. And we adapt that model since 2007 to the Colombian context. Now, 90%, 93% of the people who were affected don't have any problem to adapt to a new life in legality and in the citizenship. 76% of the people that we receive was an alphabet when they start the process. Now, 82% are not illiterate. They have reached basic primary school, 22,000 of them. They are bachelors, 16,000 of them. And nowadays, at least 2,800 persons are doing higher educational courses. 5,000 of them are professionals today. In the productive dimension, we understood that you could not give support to the ex-combatant immediately they arrive to make them entrepreneurs. You have to change, you have to work, you have construct abilities and new capacities to adapt to the productive world. It's not the productive dimension, is the more mature phase of the reintegration process. But we also work to make them entrepreneurs, like 20 to 30%. The 70% of them will be a good employee, not a good entrepreneur. So we manage and we make that the private sector be involved in all the process, and the public sector is the one who give all the services. We don't make a particular health policy or educational policy to the ex-combatant. We work with the national policy, but with the sight or the emphasis to correct those policies for all the Colombians. Since 2003 and 2007, we give like 5,000 support to make, to build business. Only 13% now are working. With the changes of the methodologies, we gave like 6,000 benefit for the entrepreneurs since 2010 and 2015, and now 76% of those businesses work today. We have a dimension with the citizenship and reconciliation that's very important. In Colombia, we have a void to manage our history. This process want to make responsible all the Colombians about the conflict. And we have to work a lot with the communities. We have to make reconciliation a very important step in this process. That's why we work with the communities. We have a reintegration-based community model that's been put in place since 2007 by the support of the Commission, the European Commission. We also work on prevention of recruitment and all those aspects of violence for childhood and youth. And we also manage that all the ex-combatants must, in the more mature phase, give 80 hours of daytime working for the communities, for the victims, and doing exercise of reaching agreement of what the communities and what the victim wants, the work, the civil work they will do, will benefit the communities. This is compared to jail. The jail in Colombia for a person for a year, it costs at least $6,000 per year per person. The rate of success of the jail in Colombia is 30%. From 10 persons who go to jail, 70 will commit new crimes 3 years after they go out of jail. That's same average for the US, 66% of failure in the jail of the American system. The reintegration process will cost like $2,000 per year per person, and the rate of success is at least 66%. That means from 30 people who go to the process, 8 still maintain illegality. So it is the best way to treat those who went to the fights and illegality is the best way to adapt them to a new life, a new civilian life that go deep in the democracy system in Colombia. We have a long experience working with the private sector. The private sector started working with us in 2006. Nowadays, we're working with 600 companies who are involved in the process. They give job for at least 2,000 ex-combatants, and the private sector who doesn't work with us give the opportunities of a job for 8,000 more ex-combatants. 70% of the ex-combatants who came to the process are now working. 30% in a formal job, 70% in an informal job. Informality is not illegality, but there's a little step between those sectors. So we're working very hardly to help formality, to help to the government to make the good decision to formalize the economy, and to help best conditions for jobs and for the entrepreneurs that we have. And this work for the ex-combatant, but also for the population who are in bad conditions for Colombia. I will say we have an experience that's very successful. We have some impact that if you compare to other DDR processes, we are behind them. But also, we are in a new context with the FARC peace process, and we have to put all those lessons learned that we have, and the capacity that we have, to the service to a new context. A new context that need Colombia to think out of the box, to be very innovative, and to construct a new model for the reincorporation of FARC members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It was a great, succinct, but very comprehensive overview of what you've been doing, which is incredibly interesting. Can I ask you just to clarify the numbers? I think you said you're working with 18,000 at the moment, FARC plus ELN. How big a proportion, or what proportion is that of the total people that are out there that could potentially be in this program over the next few years?
Ya estoy autorizado a hablar en español, entonces estoy muy alegre. Bueno, hoy en día estamos atendiendo a 18,000 personas mes a mes, de las cuales 5,000 son exmiembros de los grupos paramilitares y el resto son exmiembros de las FARC y del ELN. De las 50,000 personas que ingresaron al proceso, hay 17,000, entre 16,500 que hoy han culminado el proceso. Y esperamos que las FARC sean máximo 15,000 personas.
Okay, so I'll answer the question in Spanish. Of the 18,000 that entered on a monthly basis, 5,000 are ex-paramilitaries, the rest are ex-FARC and ex-ELN. And of the 50,000 that entered the entire process, 16,500 or 17,000 have finalized it. and we expect another 15,000 from FAC.
Okay, let me open it to the floor. As usual, it would be very helpful. I don't think we need that. We've got microphones, but please speak up so everybody can hear you, particularly so the interpreter can hear you. Oh, we do have a mic. Please say who you are and where you're from. Lady in the middle.
English or Spanish? In English, so you don't have to translate? Yeah. My name is Alexandra Bello. I'm from the Center for Latin American Caribbean Center at LC. The question is, continue with the numbers. From the numbers of ex-combatants you have been working with, how many of these are women? And is there any particular component addressing the particular needs and perspectives of women in this program?
Bueno, mira. De las 50.000 personas, más o menos el 20% son mujeres. Viendo la necesidad de hacer un approach cada vez más fuerte en los temas de género, no solamente para las mujeres, sino para los hombres, empezamos a desarrollar con la cooperación sueca un modelo de atención para las nuevas masculinidades, porque hay que reformar ese modelo tradicional del macho colombiano que ejerce violencia y produce violencia, pero también redefinir el espacio de la mujer que quiere trabajar, la mujer que quiere ser madre y que ha dejado los grupos armados. Hoy tenemos un modelo que Naciones Unidas y particularmente el DPKO está replicando, que desarrollamos entre el año 2011 y el año 2013 y lo estamos implementando.
So of the 50,000, approximately 20% are women. We identified the need to implement a gendered approach both for men and for women, and so we worked closely with Sweden in order to define masculinity as a whole, and we understand that perhaps the old definitions of Colombian masculinity were perhaps associated with aggression and violence. We also understood that the role and the definition of women in society needed to be studied as well, and ideas of and definitions of working women and mothers would need to be integrated into our approach. The UN, in fact, has also replicated a model that we have developed between 2011 and 2013, taking into account this gendered approach.
Thank you very much for your presentation and to LSE for hosting the event. My name is Veronica Inestrosa. I work in the International Bar Association's Human Rights Institute. I have two questions, but I don't know whether I'm allowed. The first one was to follow on the gender question. You say you only have 20% of the total are women. I wonder if you know whether that's because women are not likely to be taken as soldiers, more as cooks, wives, despite being in the war, and therefore didn't formally demobilize, or whether that's, you know, the number of women that were actually part of the paramilitary. And the second one, I understand that it hasn't been yet defined whether it would be your agency the one taking forward the process with the FARC, and that I understand there are like... you know, from the vocabulary use, you know, the FARC do not necessarily identify with demobilizing us because they are not being forced to leave their weapons, to reintegration and so forth, to not wanting to follow the same process that the paramilitary did. So where are you? I know there's a commission working on that, but an update would be much appreciated. Thanks.
Verónica, mira, muchas gracias. Primero decirte que la agencia trabaja con excombatientes de los paramilitares y con excombatientes de FARC y ELN históricamente en los últimos 14 años. Decirte que más o menos el 20% es lo que hemos recibido y lo que podemos intuir es que las FARC podría tener hasta un 30% de combatientes que sean de género femenino. las mujeres en la guerra no solamente hicieron labores de cocineras y de temas de apoyo, también fueron soldadas de la guerra. Uno de los grandes problemas de la guerra es que las pone en unas condiciones muy parecidas a los hombres. Por ejemplo, si un hombre tiene que cargar 40 kilos de leña, la mujer tiene que hacer lo mismo. Si hay que hacer una trinchera de 20 metros, las mujeres y los hombres trabajan igual, y eso genera pues unas dificultades, sobre todo en el approach que tenemos que hacer con los enfoques de género inicialmente. Es una de las brechas que tenemos que resolver inicialmente, porque las mujeres no se reconocen como mujeres, sino como combatientes. Entonces hay que volver a conectar el asunto, pero también hay que decirlo, hay que volver a conectar el combatiente hombre con una masculinidad más propensa a la civilidad y al ejercicio de la ciudadanía. Yo tengo el privilegio de estar hoy nombrado y la responsabilidad de estar nombrado en el Consejo Nacional de Reincorporación con la ministra Clara López Obregón y con dos comandantes de las FARC, Pastora Lape y Jairo Quintero. Nosotros empezamos a trabajar desde diciembre en esa comisión. Primero nos pusimos un desafío, es construir confianza. Dos, discutir los temas con transparencia en esa comisión. Y tres, tratar de entender cuál es el rol y cuál es la capacidad que tenemos tanto los actores de gobierno como los actores de FARC de materializar integralmente el acuerdo. Eso ha implicado que la agencia pues tenga que adaptarse. La agencia lleva trabajando con indultados hace más de un año en que empezaron a salir de cárcel. Eso generó que tuviéramos que diseñar un modelo particular, pero un modelo que ha sido co-construido con las FARC. No es un modelo impuesto. En el Estado colombiano estamos muy acostumbrados a construir de arriba para abajo. En este nuevo contexto construimos dialogando, poniendo sobre la mesa las perspectivas y tratar de ponernos de acuerdo. Yo no te puedo decir si la agencia va a hacer. Lo que te puedo decir es que hoy las FARC reconocen en la agencia una capacidad. Están solicitando que hagamos unos ajustes institucionales en el marco del Consejo Nacional de Reincorporación para que la agencia tenga la capacidad para implementar los acuerdos. Pero yo creo que todos somos conscientes que no hay capacidad en el Estado y en la institucionalidad para asumir el reto que significa la reincorporación. La reincorporación es, para mi gusto, el aspecto más importante del Pacto de Paz. Si fallamos en ese aspecto, probablemente en el resto vamos a fallar y no nos podemos dar el lujo de cometer errores, o por lo menos que sean nuevos errores, porque tenemos que aprender de la experiencia colombiana y de la experiencia internacional.
So thank you very much for your question. First of all, the ACR has been working and reintegrating ex-paramilitaries and ex-FARC and ELN combatants over the last 14 years. And we've noticed that 20% of those people that we have demobilized and we have integrated have been women. We have also observed that in terms of the FARC, up to 30% of those are women as well. We understand that women, from what we've observed, have been participating in the war, not only in a supporting role as cooks or in those kinds of roles, but also as soldiers, and have actually been fighting under the same conditions as men. So if they were asked to carry 40 kilos of firewood, they would have to do this under the same conditions as the male combatants. They would also dig trenches under the same conditions as male combatants. And so the problem that we've encountered in our gendered approach is that these women don't seem to identify as women in the traditional sense, but as combatants. And so that's why we've also decided to redefine masculinity for the male combatants, so that they are more able to fit in and adapt to society as civilians. In terms of your question regarding the FARC, we have established a commission with which I head. We've got a lot of only one and two FARC representatives, and in this commission our objective when it comes to developing a strategy for demobilization and integration is to develop trust, discuss the major issues with transparency, and define clearly the role that the government and FARC will have in this process and come to some kind of an agreement. The model, it's clear, has to be adapted to the reality of this movement and therefore will be jointly developed and not imposed by the government, as is often the case in government initiatives in Colombia, which perhaps start at the top and then filter downwards or imposed from the top. So an agreement will have to be reached between the two parties, but it's still unclear at this stage what role the ACR will have, even though we've noticed during our talks that the FARC does recognise the value of this institution and the role that it could have. It is our intention to implement some kind of agreement, but at the same time it's worth recognising and admitting that perhaps we don't have sufficient capacity to do that. The main and most important part of the DDR process is the reintegration. This is fundamental, and therefore there's no room for failure. We can't afford to fail in this particular aspect or to commit new mistakes, or any mistakes, but mainly new mistakes, because over the years we have been learning from our mistakes, and those mistakes we should be committed not only on a national level but on an international level as well.
Thank you very much for your speech and for your role in all this. I'm Jorge, student at the LSE, postgraduate, and my question is, I was wondering what's the policy of the agency to avoid giving the wrong message that crime pays, and that actually horrible crimes might be pardoned and even receive benefit from the state? How do you avoid giving that wrong message? What's the policy? Thanks very much.
Gracias, Jorge. Mire, nosotros desde el principio hemos tenido ese dilema. Es cómo lograr que la sociedad no entienda que el delito, que la violencia y la ilegalidad paga. A nosotros nos ha tocado trabajar con los victimarios, con los combatientes, con los que han cometido, sin duda, delitos, abusos, pero esa es la realidad del país, esa es la realidad de nuestra historia. Y entendemos que solo desde una visión de oportunidad, de dignidad y de humanidad, podemos realmente cerrar las brechas de la violencia. Y en ese sentido lo que hemos tenido como apuesta es mejorar consistentemente las políticas públicas en salud, en educación, en formación para el trabajo, para todos los colombianos, desde el laboratorio de innovación social más grande que tiene Colombia, que es la Agencia Colombiana para la Reintegración, por una simple razón. Yo solo tengo a cargo a 50.000 personas. El director del SENA o la directora del SENA tiene 2 millones de colombianos a cargo. El ministro o la ministra de Educación tiene 28 millones de colombianos. El director de la Unidad para las Víctimas tiene 8 millones de víctimas a cargo. Ahí es muy difícil innovar y saber dónde hay desafíos de política pública. Lo que podemos hacer desde la agencia en una visión de equidad y de sostenibilidad es esforzarnos para entender dónde hay oportunidades de mejora. Y por eso tenemos todo un componente comunitario de reconciliación, porque esto tiene que llevar unos beneficios reales a las comunidades más vulnerables y más afectadas por la violencia.
Thank you. This is a dilemma that we struggled with from the beginning. We felt that it would be important to prove to society that obviously crime doesn't pay. We've been working closely with ex-combatants, people with a criminal background, and this was necessary because it forms part of the history of our country, and we feel that these people needed to be treated with dignity because that's the only way that these wounds would heal.
I think one of the main benefits of the approach has been an improvement in public policy in a number of different spheres, health, education, which has had an impact on everyone. In my department at the ACR, I am responsible for the 50,000 demobilised people, whereas the ministers of health, of education, and of the victims of the war are responsible for collectively for millions of Colombians. So I think it's always difficult to know where improvements in public policy can be made, but this is something that we aim to do as part of our department, and it all ties in with the process of reconciliation, which is a key pillar of the strategy.
Thank you very much. So my name is Andrea Castagno. I am a postgrad student at the LSE as well. So my question is related with the one you did, actually. So you refer to one of the principles of the program as ownership, and you explain it saying that 90% of the funds of the program come from the Colombian budget. So I'm wondering, like, in a peace process that divided the society that we could see in the referendum, and like half of the society agreed and half of the society not. So how is this ownership defined? How are you working with the citizens that voted for no and that maybe reject the reintegration of these people into the society? So how is this ownership for these people?
Bueno, yo creo que el resultado del referendo fue sorprendente, y es sorprendente para un país que ha vivido 54 años en conflicto, que encontrar una posibilidad de arreglo institucional en el marco de la legalidad, mayoritariamente, así sea por una pequeña proporción, haya sido votado en contra. Y esas son las heridas que yo creo que el país tiene que recoger. Yo creo que este no puede ser un diálogo y un proceso entre una visión Santos, expresidentes, derecha, izquierda, es una visión reductista. Definitivamente el referendo abrió la posibilidad para renegociar el acuerdo. Muchos de los aspectos problemáticos que los representantes y los voceros del no tenían fueron ajustados. Si ustedes leen el primer acuerdo y el segundo acuerdo, hay unos cambios significativos, por ejemplo, en todo el aprovechamiento de la capacidad institucional. Yo personalmente creo que el acuerdo número 2 es un mejor acuerdo, pero no hay acuerdos perfectos. Definitivamente los colombianos tendremos que ir a las elecciones el año próximo y tendremos que votar a favor del acuerdo o en contra del acuerdo. Yo espero que seamos conscientes que esta es la mejor situación humanitaria que hemos tenido en décadas. Yo, que tengo 40 años, nunca en la vida había visto un hospital militar como el que tenemos, sin pacientes, sin heridos, sin muertos. Hace pocos días el CERAC sacó un estudio que calcula que más o menos el acuerdo ha permitido salvar 2.700 vidas. Eso ya debería ser un indicativo de lo que los colombianos estamos haciendo y cómo hoy somos un ejemplo en un mundo cada vez más polarizado, en un mundo que no está encontrando soluciones. Y que nosotros, los colombianos, que hace 15 o 20 años éramos un país casi fallido, encontramos una alternativa. Pero sin duda el contexto no es perfecto. Y creo que seremos nosotros, los electores a conciencia, que tendremos que ratificar si este camino que tomamos es el que queremos para nuestros hijos y para nuestros nietos.
So the referendum result was surprising, especially given the fact that Colombia has been in conflict for the last 54 years. I think it's important to find an institutional resolution in this context, and I was surprised that in the end so many people voted against the agreement in the referendum. It's important not to be narrow-minded or have a very reductionist view when considering this, and perhaps splitting the population into those who were in favour of the left or the right or Santos or the ex-president. It was the moment to negotiate the agreement, and I think some changes, some positive changes, were made in the second agreement to increase institutional capacity, for example. I think the second agreement is an improvement on the first, even though no agreement is perfect. It's clear that next year there will be elections in Colombia, and that is when the population will have to vote for or against the agreement. I think in any case we find ourselves in Colombia experiencing the best humanitarian situation which most of us have experienced in our own lifetimes. I myself am 40 years old and I've never seen the military hospital so empty. In fact, thanks to the work that's been done, or actually in the recent study, it's been indicated that 2,700 lives have been saved thanks to the agreement. And I think this as a whole is indicative of the fact that Colombia can be seen as a very positive example of how a country can rebuild itself, especially in the context of a world which is quite polarized. It's a country who almost failed, who found itself dragged into a war, but found a way to build itself up and an alternative way to move forward. So I think it will be down to the voters next year to decide how we move forward with the agreement and what kind of future can be built for future generations.
Hi, my name's Gwen Bennett. I'm a PhD student at UCL. Thank you very much for your talk and for sharing those numbers with us. I think those statistics are really testimony to the impressive work that the ACR has been doing for many years. And I'm really glad to hear you say that despite FARC's initial reticence at the model of individual DDR, that you are working hard to make sure the lessons that you've learned in the agency are available during this process. And of course, you can't share all of the secrets of the Consejo Nacional de Reincorporación, but I wanted to ask you specifically about the bridge with the private sector. Obviously, the agency has many years and a very incredible relationship of trust with 650 private companies, you said. Obviously, the FARC aren't thinking in terms of becoming taxi drivers and supermarket assistants, but they are thinking in terms of building unidades productivas and other kinds of collective projects. Is there any way that you're thinking about how to use that bridge as making in these private companies as buyers rather than employers? Or how are you thinking to take advantage of that bridge that you have with the private sector, which is such an important sector in fostering a climate of reconciliation in Colombia?
Uno de los temas que me han pedido en el Consejo Nacional de Reincorporación es ayudar a construir un diálogo constructivo con la empresa privada. Yo siento que hoy las FARC ven a la empresa privada como un modelo para construir esas unidades productivas que ellos se sueñan. Yo creo que también son conscientes que eso que ellos se sueñan tiene que tener unas adaptaciones, unas generaciones de capacidades internas y externas para poderlo materializar y poder aprovechar esos escasos recursos que tenemos para transformar la realidad en los territorios. Entonces, decirte que creo que a partir de la decantación de los proyectos productivos, uno de los elementos que tendremos que hacer es traer a los actores del sector privado que saben de esas temáticas, que tienen una experiencia relevante para poder transferir ese conocimiento a las FARC y a sus miembros. También creo que hoy se abre una posibilidad de diálogo distinto con el sector privado. El sector privado probablemente va a ser un aliado en muchos temas de las FARC, en los temas productivos. Así que eso nos da una nueva dinámica. Es una dinámica donde el sector privado está asumiendo un compromiso y un rol en la construcción de ese nuevo país que tenemos que materializar en el marco del acuerdo.
One of the topics that we discuss in the Reintegration Council is the beneficial role that the private sector have And when we've been discussing the demobilization of FARC and the creation of these unidades productivas, it's clear that they will need the capacity to do this, and this is something that will actually transform the situation, everyday life in Colombia as we see it today. So we believe that there will come a point where the private sector will have to work closely with the FARC and to use their experience and convey their knowledge and their expertise to the FARC, and that the dialogue, the dynamic will change, it will become different, and the private sector will eventually become an ally for these ex-combatants. We feel that the private sector does have a very important role in building the country, but the role that it has still is yet to be defined.
First of all, thank you for the wonderful work that you're doing at the OCR. My name is Ruti Ballesta, and we're working with a community interest company in the UK. We've just won a major contract with a national restaurant chain to supply Lulu, and we, with the idea of this potential of Lulu to contract harvest in the conflict areas. And my question is, I've read some rumours in the media that the FARC are hoping that some of them could stay in the Zonas Veredales, and I just wondered if there's any more information about if they're going to settle and have fruit projects.
Bueno, yo no puedo contestar sobre todos los aspectos de la dejación de las armas, no es mi responsabilidad. Lo que les puedo decir es que la reincorporación tendrá que ocurrir donde este grupo de personas vayan a vivir y todo el componente productivo tendrá que irse desarrollando. Creo que cometeríamos un error en pensar en los proyectos productivos masivamente desde el principio, pensar en que tienen la capacidad, que las tierras están disponibles. Esto va a ser un esfuerzo monumental, pero lo productivo es lo que va a asegurar que en el largo plazo la reincorporación sea eficiente y eficaz. Los temas de frutas, Colombia tiene unas ventajas competitivas, si las sabemos aprovechar, creo que va a ser algunos cultivos que pueden dar resultados en el largo plazo para materializar la reincorporación.
I can't give you a particularly detailed answer to your question and can't talk about all the different aspects of disarmament in this particular instance, but it's worth mentioning that reintegration has to take place where the ex-combatant lives, and the productivity needs to be developed there as well. So it makes no sense to develop a productivity strategy on a mass scale that we can try and implement as a blanket. A number of different aspects need to be taken into account, like the availability of land, for example. But it's also clear that Colombia does have a significant competitive advantage in terms of fruit, and this will have a significant role and help with the reintegration process.
I can ask that you mentioned, I think a while ago, something about the mistakes that have been made, and it's very important to your whole structure to learn from mistakes. Can you share with us perhaps a little bit of what you've done, you are doing differently now compared to the past? What are some key lessons that you've taken on board?
Bueno, muchos ejemplos. Yo creo que, por ejemplo, con todo el modelo del año 2000, estimulábamos y dábamos unos mayores beneficios para la gente que no tenía la primaria, pero no lo condicionábamos y no lo acompañábamos. Entonces, frente a esa posibilidad, la gente empezó a abusar y se quedaba en primaria y no superaba las condiciones. Por eso decidimos ponerle unos tiempos máximos a la atención, para asegurar que las personas sean conscientes que esto no es un estímulo permanente y un acompañamiento, sino que es transitorio, para facilitar la creación de competencias y habilidades que les permitan ser ciudadanos autosuficientes, con las dificultades que eso significa ser ciudadano autosuficiente en mi país. Otro aprendizaje, el modelo de educación que utilizábamos era un modelo diseñado para adultos mayores, personas de 80 años. Cuando mayoritariamente la gente tiene menos de 40 años, pues hay que adaptar ese modelo para que ese modelo esté muy conectado con el componente productivo, los oficios técnicos, tecnológicos, la posibilidad de ir a las universidades. Y eso implica que ese modelo que es funcional para los adultos no necesariamente es funcional para un joven de contexto rural o de contexto urbano que tiene que adaptarse a la vida productiva. Lo tengo que decir, nosotros desde la agencia también hemos venido innovando en el marco de leer los acuerdos. Durante los 4 años de negociación nosotros no estuvimos esperando a que los acuerdos estuvieran firmados. Estuvimos leyendo, tratando de darle un contexto a esos acuerdos para tratar de innovar en la ruta de reintegración convencional para poder tener al servicio de lo que hoy el país tiene y es la realidad de la reincorporación de las FARC, experiencia significativa. Ahí, por ejemplo, el sector privado nos ha ayudado muchísimo y debo reconocer el trabajo del sector privado para generar capacidad rápida de formación para el trabajo en diferentes aspectos, en temas de agricultura, en temas de ecoturismo, en tema de oficios para ciertas profesiones, y eso nos ha permitido tener unos modelos que hoy fácilmente podemos, por ejemplo, nosotros ya entrenamos 30 desmovilizados para ser desminadores humanitarios y lo sabemos hacer y sabemos qué se requiere. El desminado humanitario va a ser uno de los componentes de la reintegración. Hoy tenemos una experiencia significativa que puede servir para la estructuración, por ejemplo, de la organización de las FARC Humanicemos, que va a hacer labores de desminado en los territorios. Entonces, ahí les pongo ejemplos de cosas que hemos venido mejorando y adaptando desde los errores y preparándonos para el desafío que significa la reincorporación.
So there are many examples actually of mistakes that have been made and lessons that have been learned. Since 2000, for example, in the year 2000, we were offering significant benefits and resources to people who continued their studies but only to primary level, and we realized that it was necessary to establish certain limits and to promote education, to incentivize people to gain more independence and to develop themselves on a professional and personal level. We realized that the models that we were using at the time were not suitable for the ex-combatants, many of whom were below the age of 40, and so we understood that at that point the model needed to be adapted to promote better reintegration and a more productive element, and it was important for it to adapt to both people coming from the rural and the urban settings. We've also innovated a great deal in terms of our reintegration agreements and models. Instead of signing things off straight away, we've taken the time to study and analyse the different aspects. And I think also the public sector has had a significant role. They've helped a great deal to generate capacity in Colombia to offer training in different fields like agriculture and ecotourism. In fact, 30 ex-combatants have gone on to work in deactivating landmines, and we've that's kind of something that's been developed and an interesting experience that that others have learned from.
Hola, yo soy Juan Mario. Quiero preguntarte. Yo entiendo que la complejidad del conflicto se refleja en las complejidades del posconflicto. Pero tengo la sensación de que a veces enfocarnos en la idea de posconflicto nos hace perder de vista que uno de los elementos complicados del proceso es la existencia del conflicto. decir, hablamos de posconflicto mientras todavía hay conflicto. De hecho, en algunas áreas donde la guerrilla se ha desmovilizado, se presentan nuevamente confrontamientos y enfrentamientos armados entre grupos ilegales nuevos y antiguos en disputa de ciertas áreas. Eso de un lado. De otro lado, el reporte de derechos humanos, de la Oficina de Derechos Humanos, indica que a medida que disminuyen las víctimas por el conflicto, aumentan los asesinatos selectivos de defensores de derechos humanos, activistas, líderes sociales. ¿Cómo preocupa esta situación a la Comisión y qué estrategias están pensando, puesto que asegurar la estabilidad del conflicto no solamente es asegurar medios financieros y humanos, sino también la durabilidad y la estabilidad de los que se desmovilizan?
Bueno, comparto con usted que ponerle etiquetas a lo que se viene va a ser muy complejo. Se decidió ponerle posconflicto, pero yo entiendo que la sociedad no está exenta del conflicto. Es más, creo que el conflicto es necesario para la vida humana. Entonces, comparto con usted que el creer que va a haber ausencia de conflicto es un error. Yo creo que hay que aprovechar ese conflicto para construir una democracia más sólida. Usted pone sobre la mesa uno de los temas más complejos, los asesinatos selectivos. Yo creo que Colombia tiene que hacer un esfuerzo por entender la historia tan dolorosa que tenemos. Por ejemplo, el genocidio de la UP no se puede volver a repetir. Hoy hay una lección de Colombia. Hoy las FARC están haciendo una transición de grupo armado ilegal a un grupo político, social y económico. Y están dejando las armas. Debo además reconocer que las FARC han comprobado en este proceso que tienen una capacidad de liderazgo y que están comprometidos con el acuerdo. Y eso hay que reconocerlo. Así que tenemos que hacer todos los esfuerzos por entender de dónde vienen esos asesinatos selectivos. El fiscal general se ha comprometido en la estructuración de un grupo especializado. Según lo que entiendo, van avanzadas las investigaciones y espero que caiga todo el peso de la ley de estos contra esos spoilers que existen en cualquier proceso, pero que nos deben alentar para realmente como colombianos respaldar lo que estamos haciendo y construir institucionalidad. Yo personalmente creo que el conflicto en Colombia se ha agudizado porque hay una ausencia de una institucionalidad correcta, que funcione, que deje de lado la corrupción, que sea funcional para promover igualdad de oportunidades a todos los colombianos. Y en ese marco tenemos que dar una respuesta rápida como sociedad y como Estado para evitar que esto siga ocurriendo. Pero vamos a tener muchas amenazas. Yo creo que hay muchos enemigos de la paz y vamos a tocar muchos intereses que en la guerra fueron muy funcionales y que ahora en la paz se van a tener que transformar.
So the question was about the complexity of conflict, which also leads to complexity in a post-conflict situation. If we focus on the post-conflict situation, then we lose sight of the existence of the conflict. And it seems that there are still armed confrontations despite the demobilization of the combatants. And the Human Rights Office has also indicated that there's been an increase in crime and these selective murders. So how do we ensure the safety of the demobilized population? It's very difficult to put a label on this situation that we're experiencing. In this case, it has been defined as a post-conflict situation, but I agree with you that it would be a mistake to ignore the conflict. In fact, I think that conflict can be used as a tool. You were right to mention this very problematic issue of these selective murders or assassinations, and it's important that we understand what is behind this and make sure that genocide doesn't repeat itself. The FARC was considered an illegally armed group and is now experiencing a transition and where it will finally political and social group. That's the journey that it finds itself on currently. But we need to ensure that it is committed to the agreement that we've established. So we need to understand why there has been this rise in crime, and in fact a specialist police group has been set up to investigate this, and we will be using them, and they will be supporting us in what we're doing here. It's clear that conflict exacerbates any tense situation, but what's really important here is the existence of institutions, because they will ensure equality in the population and lack of corruption. So really we need to be focusing on how to use this and how to ensure peace and transform this the situation as it is currently.
Great, thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. My name is Summer and I'm with International Alert. My question is around the softer side of reintegration. So you've talked a lot about hard programs, about livelihoods, education, health, which are all really important. But you have generations of people for 54 years that have grown up in conflict and have been programmed to think probably to a conflict mind as opposed to a peace solution. So do you have softer programming going on around how you have a dialogue, how you have conversations with people that may be conflictual, where you don't necessarily jump to violence, which I think is quite an important aspect? Thank you.
Yo creo que acá los programas duros y blandos van a ser necesarios. Yo creo que uno de los componentes que tendremos que profundizar es en los valores democráticos, en la participación ciudadana. Ese es uno de los elementos que yo creo que es más complejo del sistema democrático colombiano. Desafortunadamente en Colombia no existe lo público para la gran mayoría de la gente. Lo público es el espacio donde los funcionarios se roban la plata. Es el espacio donde la política de educación o la política de salud, cuando alguien tiene un poquito de recursos, mete a sus hijos en el modelo privado. Yo creo que ese es un ejercicio que tendremos que recuperar los colombianos. Cómo apropiarnos de lo público y cómo aprender que lo público no es el trámite de las necesidades individuales, sino el trámite de las necesidades colectivas, en donde nos encontramos todos como iguales y compartiendo unos contextos y unas necesidades. Me parece que todos los temas de derechos humanos van a ser importantes. Me parece que va a ser fundamental que los excombatientes y las comunidades aprendan a gestionar con el Estado la oferta pública, que no siempre es sencilla. Uno de los valores que yo hoy reconozco de la política de reintegración es que los desmovilizados ya no protestan tirando piedra, sino me mandan derechos de petición exigiendo una respuesta efectiva y eficaz del Estado. Y en ese marco creo que tendremos que desarrollar todas unas estrategias alternativas. En el pasado hemos utilizado el yoga como experiencia significativa para superar conflictos emocionales. Hemos utilizado la lectura, hemos utilizado el deporte, hemos utilizado el arte como un elemento para mostrar que hay otras alternativas y como un elemento de construcción de ciudadanía. Hemos utilizado la musicoterapia. Hemos explorado una cantidad de aspectos que creo que tienes toda la razón, son absolutamente necesarios para asegurar que estos beneficios le llegan a todos los colombianos.
I believe that both a hard and a soft approach are necessary, and these must focus on democratic principles and the engagement of citizens. There is corruption in the public sector in Colombia. In fact, I would go as far as to say that it's characterized by corruption, and doesn't the public sector perhaps doesn't receive the kind of support that it needs to in terms of financing and resources. In fact, as soon as someone has a little bit of extra money to spend, then even in education or in healthcare, they will stop using the public services and switch directly to private ones. So more support needs to be given to the public sector so that it can respond to the needs of the entire population. I think with regard to your question, human rights issues are increasingly important, and I think both the ex-combatants and society as a whole will need to engage with the state in order to develop these topics. And we're seeing more and more frequently how the demobilised people are asking for a response rather than responding with violence, and it's clear that we do need alternative strategies for reintegration to be a success. We've already looked at yoga as a way or as a strategy for from an emotional perspective, also things like reading, art, sports, music therapy, and all of these different approaches I think are necessary, and I think Colombia can benefit from them all.
Okay, I've got three final questions.
We're going to
take them all together. One at the
back, yes. Okay, my name is Silvia Forero. I am studying a postgraduate study here in LSE, and my question is, what is the specific strategy for the young and the teenager people that have been demobilized? I think that it's a very complex issue, since they have never, it's not a process of reintegration, but more a process of integration to the society. And I think that it is quite to be a long-term process. So I don't know if the state has really the capacity and what have been the strategies for with the ACR to try to have and address the integration process of these people.
Thank you very much. My name is Laura and I'm a PhD student at the Law Department at King's College. I have one small question relating to a bigger one. And the first question is how many percentage more or less should get reintegrated in a rural and in an urban setting? So the comparison between cities and the countryside. And then my guess is more people on the countryside or in a rural setting. And relating to this, I wonder how, at the moment, far people perceive of the private sector in the rural setting, because, of course, a lot of conflicts had been involved around extractive industry and around the subject of land and of mines, and how, in general, the collaboration with the private sector is perceived in those regions.
I'm Alice Sampson, and I'm visiting the Mannheim Center here at the LSE. Thank you very much. You talked about your integration policy influencing public policy, and I wondered whether it has influenced the responses to gangs, and particularly girls in gangs and girl gangs in Bogota at all, and if it has, what those responses are.
Bueno, muchas gracias. Miren, primero decirles que la agencia tiene capacidad de atender personas mayores de 18 años. Los menores de edad van a un proceso de restablecimiento de derechos establecido y manejado por el Instituto de Bienestar Familiar. Viendo los vacíos frente a esa política, el CNR ha venido trabajando de la mano con la Alta Consejera para los Derechos Humanos de la Presidencia de la República, con el Instituto de Bienestar Familiar, con la UNICEF, para diseñar un modelo que hoy se está implementando para un grupo de menores que han venido saliendo de las FARC. Hoy vamos a mitad de camino de ese modelo, un modelo que se está implementando con todo el rigor y todo el acompañamiento de organizaciones sociales para asegurar el restablecimiento de derechos, pero al mismo tiempo generando condiciones para que estos jóvenes que estuvieron en las FARC, si ellos deciden, no pierdan el contacto con las FARC, si ellos lo deciden. Frente a la segunda pregunta, ¿cuál es la proporción de zonas rurales y zonas urbanas? Lo que te puedo decir es que de las 50.000 personas que hemos recibido, más o menos el 60% de las personas vienen de zonas rurales y un 40% vienen de zonas urbanas. El reclutamiento y la vinculación en zonas urbanas es un fenómeno desconocido y poco público en Colombia. El conflicto no es solamente en las zonas rurales aisladas. El conflicto tiene que ver con situaciones de inequidad y de pobreza extrema en las ciudades, donde tendremos que hacer un énfasis también. El sector privado, yo no te podría decir cuál es la percepción que se tiene desde las FARC con el sector privado. No soy vocero de las FARC y no me atrevo a hablar en nombre de ellos. Lo que te puedo decir es que yo creo que las FARC son conscientes que el sector privado debe jugar un rol fundamental más allá de una visión de responsabilidad social y más allá de una visión de caridad. Tiene que jugar un rol y tiene que apoyar todos estos procesos, porque estos procesos solo funcionan si la sociedad en su conjunto los ve beneficiosos para transformar dinámicas de una sociedad en conflicto a una sociedad en paz o en una sociedad reconciliada. Frente a las pandillas, nosotros este modelo lo adaptamos de una experiencia significativa de la ciudad de Medellín. La ciudad de Medellín en el año 2002-2005 desarrolló, paralelamente a la desmovilización paramilitar, todo un ejercicio para reducir violencia en las pandillas de la ciudad de Medellín. El modelo de reintegración arrancó de ese enfoque, particularmente el enfoque de reducción de violencia juvenil en torno a las pandillas. Nosotros como agencia no tenemos responsabilidad en los temas de pandilla, pero somos conscientes que este modelo que hemos desarrollado funciona, por ejemplo, para la gente que está en cárcel. Funciona para la gente de las pandillas. Hemos venido haciendo un trabajo muy fuerte con El Salvador. Tenemos hoy un convenio o una carta, unos acuerdos para transferir nuestra metodología para que el gobierno de El Salvador pueda diseñar un modelo propio para reducir violencia juvenil y particularmente los temas relacionados con las maras. Y estamos trabajando con dos alcaldías municipales de Colombia que tienen este problema y lo han enfocado desde una visión no de reducción de violencia a partir del combate o no necesariamente únicamente desde el fortalecimiento de la capacidad del Estado en una visión coercitiva del asunto, sino desde una visión de oportunidad, que es la ciudad de Cali, en donde más o menos pretendemos en un modelo de 2 años poder atender a 2.000 expandilleros en la generación de habilidades y competencias para la ciudadanía, y la ciudad de Neiva está revisando también el modelo para adaptarlo. Insisto, este modelo es funcional, pero tiene que tener unas revisiones y unas adaptaciones para que le sirva al fenómeno del pandillismo y la violencia juvenil urbana que percibe nuestro país.
Okay, so thank you. First of all, it's worth mentioning that the agency mainly deals with ex-combatants above the age of 18. Minors are dealt with by the Family Wellness Institute, but we have been working closely with the presidency, with UNICEF, and with the Family Wellness Institute, Wellbeing Institute, to develop a model in order to deal with those minors that will come from the FARC. This will need to be implemented rigorously in order to re-establish the rights of these young people and make sure that the conditions are adequate and that they are leaving the FARC on their own terms. With regard to the proportion of ex-combatants or demobilized people from the urban or rural areas, of the 50,000 that we have dealt with, the split is 60-40, 60% from the rural setting and 40% from the urban environment. The affiliation of the demobilized people from urban settings is not particularly well known to us yet, but we believe that their activities are, former activities are linked to poverty. In terms of the question you asked about the private sector, unfortunately I can't speak on behalf of the FARC, so I don't know exactly how they perceive the public sector, but I do know that the public sector does play a very important role, not only in terms of the social responsibility aspect, but also in terms of building capacity in society. And it will only work, the role of the public sector will only work if society believes that it has a beneficial role in the transformation and in the reintegration process.
With regard to the question about gangs, there was an initiative launched in Medellin around 2002-2005. There, a program was set up to reduce gang violence, and our reintegration strategy was very much linked to this. We weren't responsible for the actions and the reintegration of gang members, but we are familiar with the model, and we do know that it is something that the reintegration process and strategy does work for ex-inmates and ex-gang members as a whole. We have reached agreements to transfer the models that we have developed to countries like El Salvador in order to reduce gang violence in those areas of the world. And we are also currently working with two city councils in order to reduce violence there and create opportunities for ex-gang members. In Cali, this has already involved 2,000 ex-gang members. And in Napa, we're already working on a strategy that can be adapted to include ex-gang members.
We've come to the end of our time. Thank you all for your questions. I think just the sort of diversity and richness of this is evident. And obviously a huge thank you to you for coming, for talking to us about a very interesting and important moment in Colombian history and your approach to it. We're going to hear from a student about, yes, but before, come down, because unfortunately, you know, war isn't the only tragedy and disaster, and you just wanted to make a plea, but before you do, can I just ask everybody to join me in thanking Mr. Mitrotti for a really informative